Hello and welcome to the Better Places podcast. I'm Yannis Sofoklios from Consilio, and today we'll be discussing the proposed overnight visitor levy. It may not be the biggest headline in terms of local governance coming out this week, but it certainly is important, and I am delighted to be joined here today by Dr. Julie Grail, longstanding business improvement district's expert, advisor to BEATS of all sizes across the UK, and founder of the BEATS business. Julie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
And as we're recording this, the overnight visitor levy consultation has just closed. There has been considerable noise around it, including questions about whether it's appropriate, how it should be designed, and what it could mean for businesses. But I think at the heart of the debate, the bigger issue is, can this be structured as a genuine growth mechanism, unlocking investment in places, or will it just be perceived as just another tax on an already struggling hospitality industry? Julie, with all of that in mind, and as the consultation has wrapped up, can you take us through the background and explain why this moment matters for London and other cities in England?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Yannis. I think it's really interesting you said there's been a lot of noise around it, because it's been incredible over the last 4 or 5 weeks, just the amount of conversation and discussion and debate and media that's followed this, even though in a way, it's a relatively small tax. It's a relatively kind of micro economic intervention, but it's really struck a chord and in a negative way. And I guess I'll start by saying, I think it's probably wrong tax, wrong time, but let me tell you a bit of the background. So many people have said to me in the last few weeks who don't understand, like, what's the problem? £2 a night from a tourist? What's the big deal? And of course, that's not what it is, really. We're overlaid with a whole series of issues that make this quite complicated. So I guess the starting point is Scotland went first with legislation, and Edinburgh will be the first location in Scotland to put their tourist levy on. And that will start from July of this year. Two other cities, Aberdeen and Glasgow, will be also having taxes in place. Wales have the legislation to do so, but haven't progressed it any further. So England has been on catch up anyway. So there's been a kind of prospect of this coming, despite government for quite some time saying it wasn't going to come. And ultimately, it's, I think from a policy point of view, it's seen as an opportunity to devolve power locally, to provide a local funding opportunity. And in principle, from an economical point of view, yeah, that makes sense. The trouble is, as I say, kind of wrong time, is we're already in a position where places are desperately struggling for funds. We need more money. We definitely need more budget to invest in the kind of basics of clean and safe. You know, public funding is really squeezed and there's a whole load of issues attached to it. But is this the right way to do it? I guess what we've discussed with hoteliers and with other partners over the last few weeks leading up to this consultation is the pinch points and the reasons why we should or shouldn't have this. So let me tell you a few points. I suppose the starting point is, this is being called a visitor levy, but is it really a levy? A levy is when there's ring-fenced, hypothecated spend back to those that, for the benefit of those that fund. And at the moment, there's no safeguards in that consultation that suggests the money sufficiently would be ring-fenced back to the visitor economy. So that's first real concern. And that's what's coming out of hoteliers. Come on, we're just getting taxed again for something that we're not going to see or indeed influence. That's big concern. Second piece is there's this presumption that it's just a tax on tourists, so what's the big deal? It's kind of new money, it's external money. It's not. In the data across central London, where we've done a lot of work with the hoteliers, one of the big West End hotels that you would expect to have its main business coming internationally, 50% of its business comes from domestic visitors. So this isn't international money. This is our money. This is our people. The next piece of the jigsaw, I suppose, is around competitiveness and how price elastic are these hotels in relation to a levy? Because, again, so many people uninitiated and without looking into this say, what's the big deal? £2 a night on a £300 a night room is no big deal. But add that day on day, family of four across a week, it becomes quite a significant amount of money when already we are hearing actually from all around the country, but particularly from the London hotels that we've spoken to at length, they're already really up against it from a competitiveness point of view. They're already highest global VAT rate for tourism. They're already highest airport taxes. They're already looking incredibly expensive across the global city destinations. So they don't feel like they are in a position where they've got some headroom for extra cost. And you look at places that have done it, and this is what a lot of people say, but it's okay, loads of places have a tourist tax, it's fine. There's a lot of reasons why you have a tourist tax. And the best example, because it's one of the newest that people keep saying, well, it's fine, is Venice. The reason Venice have put a tax in place is they have a significant problem of over-tourism. They're trying to stop visitors coming. They're pricing it on a kind of traffic light system to actually stop customers visiting. That's the last thing we want to happen in our cities. So, you know, if you're about over-tourism, if you're about increasing sustainability and you're putting a tax on for those reasons, there's a valid way of doing it. That's not what we're about in our English tourism destinations at the moment. And I guess the final point at this stage I would say is the reason why it's also the wrong time is businesses in hospitality, all businesses, but businesses in hospitality have really experienced a stacking of costs over the last couple of years that are just becoming completely unachievable from a profit point of view. So national insurance has already massively hit them. Minimum and or indeed living wage is a big cost on them when recruitment is already a struggle and staff retention is already a struggle. We've already had the loss of tax-free shopping, which has had a big impact on international tourism particularly into London, but all the big cities. As I said, we've already got the highest global VAT rate for tourism. And soon to come, 1st of April, we've got this absolutely extortionate high com business rates. Hotels on average across the West End will have 117% hike on business rates. All of that makes it so incredibly difficult for them to see an additional cost at a time where profit is a real struggle. So it's a worry. It's a real worry.
I think you really hit the mark here, and from the conversations I have been having with the industry throughout, I think there is this underlying assumption in this narrative that there is that demand for hotels in London and England as a whole is price inelastic. And whatever happens, we will be able to find a way to get visitors. And there are the comparisons with, as you said, Venice, Barcelona, Rome, these cities that already have the overnight visitor levy. But this is different regulatory regimes, different tax regimes. And I think you explained it well when it comes to these competitiveness points on why it works and why it doesn't. So when it comes to actually making the case for it, where do you see the strongest case for this being made in terms of actually being able to succeed if it does get implemented?
Well, there's a couple of examples of regional cities, Liverpool and Manchester, who have got their accommodation bid levy in place. And they've done that in a way where they've sort of slightly circumvented the bid legislation and have put a tourist charge on the front of a bid. So the charge is not actually a tax on tourists, but to all intents and purposes, if it's in terms and conditions, the tourist is paying that levy. And it's being then collected into a fund run by a bid by the businesses. And in essence, in those regional cities, it's being directly used as a subvention fund. So it's directly investing in bringing major events to the city that fills the hotel rooms. So some of the hotels in that environment can absolutely see the win. Now, I have to say not all of them do. We've got hotels who are located in a variety of places, including those cities, and they don't like that levy, but nevertheless they both won a ballot and they are running that initiative. So there is a case where if you can directly hypothecate spend back to the value of a hotel, they might invest. But when you then look at scale, if you go much smaller than Liverpool or Manchester, you actually haven't got enough hotels to warrant the sum of money after you take an admin away to actually bring enough money to make a difference. There's been a lot of interest in looking at accommodation bids. And in fact, so far, it is only Liverpool and Manchester who have got through a ballot just recently, yet literally in the last 2 days. Harrogate bid is the latest one that not a Harrogate area, went to ballot and has failed its ballot. There are only 15 hotels and they failed a ballot. So this isn't universally supported by hotels at all. And before that, both Cambridge area and Bournemouth area tried to get ballots off the ground. So even with the hotels themselves, they can't necessarily see sufficient value out of a combined investment. When you take it to the London scene, though, it's even more stark, I think. It isn't easy to see funds being ring-fenced into a subvention fund because the complex nature of London, it just isn't as straightforward as doing that. As I say, there is money needed. And if there was a real guarantee of ring-fencing and directly working alongside the existing delivery partners, the local authorities and the bids, we might see some useful investment. But at the moment, the safeguards just aren't there for the legislation. So there just isn't the support to see it coming through.
No, I totally agree. I think this is the main, I think there's a lot of questions around this, and this is the main thing. I'm not sure if it's a narrative and communications problem or more about the actual structure and the way the consultation document was drafted, but I do agree. So moving on into more to the specifics, away from the macro, but more of the micro, what are you hearing more consistently from the industry and from the support you have provided in terms of the actual specifics on how this potential levy could be designed? What are the key pinch points for the hoteliers, and what are these key things that they would really like to see to get the confidence that might make it worth supporting, especially as you mentioned, the allocation of funds being a big point?
Yeah, so it's interesting. One of the key kind of discussions that's been going on is, if this comes in, would we want percentage or flat fee? And in the consultation, there's a presumption that percentage is a better idea because a flat fee immediately becomes a regressive tax. So it's, you know, it's more expensive on the budget hotels. And so the budget hotels don't like the flat fee model. However, there's a real nervousness of the percentage rate being so high that it becomes a really high burden to the higher value properties and then indeed to the customer. So I think where we fell on the response was the model that they have in Paris, which is a flat fee but banded, so that you've got away from some of that regressive nature of it, but you've got clarity about what a customer is expected to pay in each kind of, you know, star of hotel, and that being a fixed number rather than a percentage variable that could become really quite unmanageable. So that's first thing. Even how you charge is just not that straightforward. There's quite a lot of discussion then about whether you have a maximum period. So for Edinburgh, they've put maximum 5 consecutive days so that it doesn't carry on as a total tax on every day that you stay. Again, really mixed views on it. A lot of hoteliers are saying, if you're going to do it, we need it as simple as possible from an admin point of view. So just bill it every day. But you've got the budget end of the market who are saying, absolutely no way. Have you seen the cost that that would put on a 2-week holiday for a family of 4 in Butlins, for example? There's a lot of work on this last week and it went into the media that the increase of a family holiday on a budget hotel is enormous if you have no cap. So those kind of semantics are, you know, critically important, that we understand the implications of those things. Beyond that, there was a lot of debate around the broad concept of, in essence, the liable party would be the hotel. So there's a privatisation of the tax liability. So a hotel is being expected to become a tax collector with then a self-assessment process that then they pass on the funds. It all feels a little bit uncomfortable and it puts an enormous admin burden onto a hotel. So we got one of the hotels in the West End to run some figures for us on the basis of them carrying a £5 a night charge as a visitor levy, and to talk through with us what the implications were on admin. They worked out 70% of that £5 charge a night would be attributed to costs on them, handling, admin, bookkeeping, accounting, and then finally managing their own tax. So there's a huge burden, admin burden, on the hotel themselves. So one of the things we've lobbied for is there shouldn't be 100% pass-through from a hotel to the collecting authority. They need an admin charge attributed to them. Otherwise, they're losing out a second time. There is a conversation within the consultation about the collecting authority being able to have an admin charge, but not the hotel itself. So if a hotel is going to be a tax collector, they need to be able to put a charge on it. So that's kind of a practical piece. The next practical piece that's come out, which I think is quite an interesting unintended consequence that, again, I'm not sure people really have thought through. What we've heard from the West End in London is many of the hotels have a voluntary service charge payable by customers at the counter, sort of in lieu of the old cash tips principle. And that money is, in many cases, commonly about 5%. Is reasonably willingly paid, not paid by everybody, but reasonably willingly paid. And that goes directly into Tronc, which is their fund that basically supplements staff wages. So it goes to all staff and it supplements the ability to recruit and retain staff despite having all those high admin costs with living wage and NI. They feel very strongly, the hotel operators, faced at the counter with a 5% service charge and a tourist tax stroke levy, you won't pay both. You'll only pay one, and you'll only pay the one you're mandated to pay. So they potentially lose quite a lot of top up of income that goes directly onto staff. That's a huge unintended consequence in this market when already staff costs are enormous. And recruitment, as I say, is really hard on the industry.
I think this is very interesting, the point you make. And I know you mentioned earlier about needing this to be as standardized as possible to reduce the admin costs as much as possible. Because as you say, this will cause a huge administrative burden, both on the collector, which is the hotels, but also at the same time, from a local authority perspective. Do you see it in some areas? Essentially, this becoming a bit more fast than actually good with respect to the admin cost that it will raise, and at the same time, the amount of money that will actually be end up raising, because obviously we're not talking about London, we're talking about mayoral authorities across England.
Yeah, when you look at, I'll be careful who I name here because they're not necessarily public information at the moment, but when you look at, I know a large city outside London has 28 hotels and on £2 a night, it would only make £2 million a year. And that's before you've put any admin burden on it. Does it really feel like it's going to make any difference at £2 million a year? Is that really, you know, we're talking about budget gaps that are significantly more than that. And if in that process you jeopardise the success of its existing city bid, that brings in 3 or 4 million a year and delivers so much more than just for the visitor economy. It feels like quite a challenging balance to make. When you go down a tier, so that's a major metropolitan city. When you go down a tier, these smaller locations, they simply don't have enough hotels in the region to warrant and to bring enough money in anyway. So I think this isn't for everywhere. It's for London and the top tier metropolitan cities. And as you say, once you've put all those other admin burdens in and the jeopardy that you put on existing systems, it's questionable how widespread it might be.
No, I certainly agree. This is very much in line with all of the conversations I have been having with the industry. And I think another aspect of the ring-fenced nature of the allocation of funds that you mentioned previously, I was doing some reading for this and I read a bit about the Barcelona arguments and how the money is being used and where, which sectors is actually the money, the area per se. And I think that's another potential problem when we're talking about raising this amount of public money and for the local authority, then how is this money going to be spent and how do you essentially ring-fence it on the visitor economy and not in other services, which are obviously important and will always feel the pressures as well. So I think that's another balance that needs to be thought about in the future design of a potential levy.
Yeah, I mean, this has really very much been brought up in the conversation around Edinburgh, because Edinburgh is kind of first to market, as I say, and it's not quite there yet in real terms. But there's a real nervousness about, I mean, the numbers that are being bandied around in Edinburgh, and it will remain to be seen whether these are the right numbers, is 50 million a year, they think they can collect via their visitor levy proposition. And of that 50 million, at the moment, it looks like only about 5 million would be redirected into things that we would call visitor economy. The other 45 million is, I think, funding Black Holes of Local Authority. And there's quite a question mark over what we consider to be visitor economy investment and what we don't. And there's no doubt, I think everybody running cities, everyone involved in place management of cities knows we need more money. We do need to improve clean and safe. We do need to improve the visitor proposition. But it does go back to being sure that this actually funds the things that are needed by the investors and makes sufficient difference. And I go back to the Venice example. When you're putting an access tax on an area that has significant over-tourism and you're trying to reduce demand, you're not concerned about price competitiveness. You're just scooping money off the top because there's enough there to be able to take it away and reinvest, and you're still not impacting the market. You're actually actively trying to stop customers coming to the place. That's not in the environment that they're in any of our cities, certainly not in London. So yeah, that balance. And I think as I started this session, the single biggest concern is this a levy or is it a tax? Will the money directly be ring-fenced back into things that we believe will make a difference to the visitor economy? And if it will, whilst it still might be wrong time and wrong tax, we might see some value out of it. But if it's not ring-fenced, if it doesn't get hypothecated, it's just costing a sector that's already massively overburdened.
I totally agree. And I think just thinking about London example as well, there's also a bit of a governance issue with lots of the different elements of placemaking, from safety, which is being essentially from the GLA, to local authorities, the cleaning. I think there is also going to be these issues on how you brought up a coordinated package in the end through this levy, and how do you make it effective. And from a next steps perspective, what are the government's next steps into this? And if you had a message for both policymakers and the hotel industry about this, what would that be?
Yeah, so I think there's probably a couple of things. I mean, the first thing is what we've heard a lot through the hoteliers is if this has to go ahead, standardise as much as possible up front, so that, you know, so many hotels across the UK are in multiple jurisdictions. They don't want loads of local scenarios that makes their admin burden even heavier. So standardise as much as possible. Secondly, from a governance point of view, in influencing the direction of spend in a locality, recognise the territory that you're in, recognise who already delivers, what they deliver and how they deliver it, and make sure that you add value to that rather than either duplicate, overlap, or indeed jeopardise those existing arrangements. If you think about just Westminster City Council region has 20 business improvement districts collecting over £25 million a year in bid levy, which is making a significant difference to the management of that space for visitors and others. If you jeopardise the success of bids going forwards, you're taking away, you're not adding. From a local authority point of view, we really recognise that, yes, delivery at local authority level for some of this money will be of value and will be important. But BIDs and other partners have got to have a seat at that table to ensure that the right delivery is done, and through the right delivery partners. We shouldn't be creating a whole of new layers of delivery when we already have partners in place. That could just end up being really self-defeating and a kind of costly operation to not really add much value.
No, I agree 100%. I think the underlying message here is the right people need to be talking in the design of this. They need to have a seat at the table, both design and in order to ensure that the industry doesn't face consequences that could be threatening for the hospitality industry as a whole. And looking beyond the visitor levy, as we said at the beginning, you are a legend within the BIT industry. What would you say in terms of the future role of BIDs, especially in policy making discussions, and what opportunities do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really difficult time for anyone operating in this space, actually, BIDs and others in local places, because we've got a huge amount of kind of political instability, both at national and local level. That's impacting how things are done day to day, how investment decisions are made, how kind of sort of spend decisions are made. We've also, as I said earlier, we've got the real challenge of the severe hike of business rates coming on 1st of April for some sectors getting a huge kind of uplift without significant transitional relief. And that's a big concern for bids and businesses, because we already know that whilst footfall in many sectors has almost, and in some cases it has reached pre-pandemic levels now. So we're kind of seeing the numbers rise. Revenues aren't. So profit is not where it needs to be. And therefore the cost of doing business is considerably higher than it was 6-7 years ago. So a lot of what we're doing is dealing with businesses who are in economic survival rather than growth. And that puts a real pressure on the way we think and the way we work with them. So I think those are some of the things that we know we're dealing with day to day. I mean, you know, the flip side is a lot of what we do in bids is about achieving economies of scale, really targeting investment into the right issues at the right time so that we do make a direct difference in places. And bids have some huge value out of doing that. And businesses love the way that they get that kind of reaction. I'm part of London Business Alliance that I know you're aware of. They're incredibly good at being very, very targeted in the way they invest their levy money, and they make marked difference in their area. So this direct local investment can work and is valuable, but you've got to be hearing what's going on. And I feel like this stacking of cost, something's got to give. We can't see all of these costs continue to be piled onto businesses without economic failure. We've got to be able to see some of that alleviated, whether that be return of tax-free shopping, whether it be a reduction on VAT for hospitality, whether it be adjustment of business rates. We've had a good loophole, a good U-turn on the pubs aspect. We haven't seen any U-turn on particularly the hotel sector, which is a huge impact. And we are seeing all these additional costs kind of layered on. So bids have got a brilliant part to play in this landscape, and they do it very well, but they're under economic pressure at the moment because their funders are.
I think this has been my experience on that, and the role of bids comes essentially, they bring the right people together, and this is when good place management comes, and that's why it's becoming ever more important to have them at the table and giving them the ability to talk to their stakeholders and to external stakeholders to ensure that the right investment is happening in the right areas. I think another interesting element of bids is the way the voting and the referendums take place. Could you see them becoming an ideal test case for digital voting as we're moving into an era of, let's say, redefining the way voting takes place?
Oh, God, absolutely. I'm a huge advocate of this, and I've been lobbying for it for 15 years. I mean, I think our voting system in bids is utterly antiquated and tiresome. And the fact that we spend 28 days shuffling pieces of paper around and losing some in the Royal Mail and everywhere else in between, we've got to see a better way of being directly connected to our businesses when we invite them to vote again for us. You know, we have brilliant levels of engagement with them day to day. We have great kind of understanding of the businesses at a whole load of different levels. And then it gets the ballot time, and we have to navigate our way to the one person in that business who might receive that piece of paper and then might, if you're lucky, know what to do with it and return it in the post. So digital voting has got to be the way forward. I mean, I have to say, across Westminster City Council has been the most advanced as an authority, digitalising everything it can in terms of voter registration information ahead of a ballot, and then in terms of its billing. So it's modernised as far as it can within the legislation. But yeah, we've got to go to that next step. It's embarrassing as bids when we go to ballot and we have to behave in this slightly kind of broker role where we say, you're voting for us, but we can't do anything because it's an impartial ballot. And we know that we know you, and we know that we have dialogue with you every day. But now you have to go through this antiquated system and put a cross on a piece of paper. You have to find it first, and then you have to return it. And yeah, we've got to be able to modernise that. And there is some appetite coming from government now to do that. We have been in discussions for some time. I hope that, you know, technology is all there, isn't it? It's perfectly workable. I hope that we get that over the line.
I agree. I think Westminster has been doing a lot of steps forward in going into this more digital age. And I think it's the most natural evolution of bit voting. I mean, it's something that I've studied since my university days in terms of how digital voting and direct democracy can actually improve efficiency at polling. And yeah, it's, I think these are a very good case study to actually explore that. At this point, Julia, I really want to thank you about this very thoughtful and timely insights on the levy and the bid world as a whole. I don't know if you have any final remark, any concluding remarks you want to tell the audience.
I guess the other just additional point worth noting is alongside the digital voting appetite that we're seeing in government is also the appetite to revisit property owner bids outside London and standalone property owner bids. I've been working on that right from day dot before the legislation. Bear in mind, bids legislation only went on to occupiers because there was an easy route to piggyback onto business rates. All the original pilot work was funded by property investors, by the owners, not the occupiers. There's still a real appetite to see owners invest in their place because they've got the long-term stake. And there's an appetite now in government to see property owner bid legislation hopefully coming through so that it goes beyond London and it can be standalone without an occupier bid. I hope we get that through too, because that allows, you've got a much greater stake in a place if you're the owner and you're trying to consider long-term change than if you're a short-term occupier.
No, 100%. I think if you think about the concept of fragmented ownership in different areas, that's when you bring them all together, because it's not an issue in an area where there is a single property owner. But when you have multiple property owners, that's when you actually solve this problem of fragmented ownerships, and you can look at 10, 20, 50 years ahead. So 100%, I think that should be one of the next key evolutions when it comes to the BIT governance.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
I've enjoyed the conversation and I hope your listeners enjoy it. And I think for more information, you know, there's so much out there on bids and there's so much kind of activity going on at local level. It's great to get under the skin of some of the detail that we do. But, you know, we're ultimately here to achieve the businesses' needs and desires, and we corral all of their needs into that investment portfolio, and we do this kind of through economies of scale, this influence, investment and spend in places.
Perfect. Thank you very, very much, Julie. Thanks everyone for listening and have a great day.
Thank you.